Hey, it's the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host. And my guest today, Rodrigo Camacaro. How you doing, Rodrigo?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chris?
Yes. I know recently in the news, you're from Venezuela, of course.
I am.
Yes, we've known each other for quite a while, and your country got in the news here lately.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few days ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, hey, I wanted to bring you in and kind of get your interest in what happened with the going-ons there. So, first of all, a little history about yourself. Rodrigo, you've been a citizen here in the U.S. for how long?
Since 2012.
Okay.
Yes.
And so you were born in Venezuela, and you lived there for how many years before you left?
If I am, my math is correct, about 22 years. I lived there. So I was born there, of course, and lived there all those years.
Mm-hmm. Were you looking to get out as a young man? Did you want to leave Venezuela?
Well, it was a little different because when I got out of Venezuela, it wasn't because political reasons, just because I found the woman that I loved.
Uh-huh.
So it was a bit different, but things were getting a little tough there at that time when uh-huh. I decided to leave Venezuela.
So you are married, and what is your wife's name?
My wife's name is Holly.
Holly, okay. And what's Holly do?
So Holly is a associate pastor of our local church, Life Church X, here okay. in Jerseyville.
Great. And you have some children?
Yes, I have two kids, Lillian, 13, Gabriel, 9 years old.
I see. And how did you and Holly meet?
So I was studying English at that time in Venezuela. I fell in love with the language, and Holly went there to do some missionary works with a group. So I was studying English in an English club, and they took us to translate for them. That's the way I met Holly, translating.
Oh, translating. And then so you guys met, and did you come? How'd you get back over here? What happened? Did you get married over there?
So, no, we became really good friends. We uh-huh. talked on the phone. I really didn't know how it was going to, you know, what was going to happen.
Because you were over there and
right,
she was here
exactly.
in the U.S.
Exactly. So I didn't know if we were going to result anything, you know, from that friendship. But, you know, we just trusted God that something was going to happen. Then I requested a visa, and I was approved, and that's how I came to this day.
Uh-huh.
And I came to visit her, and, well,
fell in love and got married.
Fell in love, got married, and 20 years later.
Yeah. And then, at what point in time, you brought your... This is kind of how we got to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
You brought your parents over to the U.S.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So there was a point in Venezuela where lives were starting getting very hard economically. There was hardly any food on the grocery stores. That was very hard to buy food because the inflation. And so, you know, I wanted to help my parents. And since I was a U.S. citizen, I was able to request them as a resident. And that's how they came to the United States.
And what year did you bring them over? What year was that?
I believe this was 2018.
Okay.
Yes.
And that wasn't enough. You brought your parents over, and then you brought your brothers over.
Yes. We got the opportunity 3 years ago to bring them through a program, the government program. We requested them. We sponsored them. They were able to come Which was really exciting because I did not know how to bring them here since I think the United States Embassy was already not existent in Venezuela at that point, since everything was getting very bad there.
Yeah, and that, of course, you contacted my wife, Brenda, because your mom and dad were living in one of our apartments.
Yes, sir.
And you said, hey, bringing over my brothers, maybe, yeah. You know, if you need a place to stay and some work. And
yes,
I said, oh, I can do that. That's for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You have been a blessing to us. And again, thank you for that, how you treated my brothers, you know, how open doors. You are a representation of what United States people are. And so we thank you for that. Yeah. They came. They were able to request a work permit. They were able to work for you at the time, stay my parents stay in one of your apartments. They still, so.
Yeah. Do. And your brothers, Miguel and Luis and Ronnie.
Ronnie, yes. Yeah, good memory.
Great guys. They worked for me at George's, and I had them doing all kinds of construction-type work on properties and stuff. I had to go on doing some tuck pointing and just all kinds of things. I do remember when I was teaching them to mow, because I have several properties that we have to mow.
Right.
And they got on those mowers and they were just kind of zigzagging around. I go, hey, you go straight back, straight forward. And they're like, oh, I go, haven't you ever mowed before? They're like, nope. He goes, never mowed. Because only rich people had grass.
That's so true. Yeah, yes. That's what I was going to say. We never had grass in our house, just dirt. So,
okay. Let's talk a little bit about the recent happenings in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Are you happy about what happened, about snatching Maduro out of?
Absolutely. Yes. I think most of Venezuelans, I would say they are very excited, very happy. I am very happy for what happened because I'm not going to say that we lost hope, but we didn't know what was going to happen to Venezuela. It has been 26 years on a regime dictatorship, and we didn't know how to get rid of that, since people have gone through the streets to protest there in Venezuela. People have tried so many ways, and nothing had happened.
Nothing worked.
Right, nothing worked until our president here, President Donald Trump, decided to do something. And so he did it.
Yeah, he did it. Boy, he did it, didn't he?
Yes.
You have no qualms about it. The Venezuelan people, even the Venezuelan people there, you think are all excited about it?
I know my brothers are. I don't know if you know, my two brothers had to go back, Ronnie and Miguel. Luis is the only one that is here, but they are super excited.
Oh, great.
Of course, they cannot express too much because it's a small portion. What happened is just a small portion of what needs to happen for a change of government, because there's still people there that are in charge and that are still with the regime dictatorship.
Yeah. Just tell me a little bit the history of Venezuela as far as you growing up there. Was it ever democracy, like when you were a kid or anything?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Growing up, before we started talking, you know, I didn't know any better, but you live a happy life there. You were able to get your groceries, were able to go to school, all the staff function like it should.
When was this? How old were you?
So let's say,
because you're 42
I remember,
now.
Maybe 6-7 years old.
Okay.
And then growing up, just on to the point of 1998 when Chavez started in power.
Okay.
That's where you start seeing the decline. Not right away.
No.
Because he.
How did he get in power?
So he had like, he was very eloquent how okay. he spoke.
Oh, okay.
He was very convincing because he, I don't know, showed like empathy for poor people. Okay. And there's a lot of there in Venezuela.
Uh-huh.
So, and then he was promising all these wonderful things like education, work, food for the poor, houses.
Free busing.
So, oh, yeah. Free. And so a lot of people were ignorant and they believed it. You know, we were deceived, I would say, because I was there as well.
Yeah.
So,
quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I want to let everybody know that I have Rodrigo Camacaro in studio today, and he is a Venezuelan, born a Venezuelan, a U.S. American now, but just telling a little bit, giving some inside info about Venezuela.
Yes.
Now, do you see any resemblance in what happened when Chavez came in to what's going on in New York City with the mayor right now?
Oh. Yes.
What do you tell me yes. about that? And, what's your opinion?
And that kind of, you know, make me so nervous for the U.S. And I know that, you know, there's check and balances here, and so I'm grateful for that. But when there is someone that just, like, he recently went to the news saying, condemning that the U.S. went there to extract Maduro, you can tell, in defending that, you can tell that he is for socialism and all for all that power for just one person, and you know, and let's just give you this and give you there, and you know, and people that are very ignorant buy to that.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, it just makes me nervous for.
Yeah. So tell me, in your experience, you know, what happens when that moves in? You know, what happens to the people when they hear all this free stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's why when we started COVID, and I know it was a different situation, you know, and we received money, I was like, I'm kind of hesitant to take
oh, yeah?
something for free, you know,
yeah.
just because I know how it started in Venezuela. When he started giving what he called it bonuses, you know, into your account, bank account every so often. So he was trying to gain popularity. So okay. when people trying to give you money for free, it will cost you at the end.
Uh-huh.
Dearly will cost you. So I would say never, never believe in someone that just giving stuff away, because it definitely will cost you.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch, no. actually.
No, sir.
Okay, when you were a kid growing there, the conditions were fairly good, but then there was things started changing and yes. socialism started creeping in.
Yes.
And what age were you when you realized, I don't know, you know, maybe I should be moving on to want to get out?
Yeah, it was, you know, I was in the stage of my life where it's like, what am I going to do? Where I'm going to college? Am I going to be able to go to college? And so that's when I started. It seemed like it is impossible to get an education here. So I was trying to see what there's opportunities that I could have. But of course, it's like all the doors were closing mm-hmm. because it was the cost of life. So that's when I started seeing this is no good.
Mm-hmm. What were the living conditions at that time for you? Or what were the living conditions? I mean, did you have electric, water? I mean, did you have all that stuff?
Yes, we still have electric, water. You can still work and get groceries. But it was no, like, it still wasn't no fair wages for yeah. a lot of people, especially people low class. And it was hard still growing up, you know, for my dad.
Oh, for your
especially.
Dad.
So,
yeah. How does your dad like living here now in the U.S.?
Both of my parents love it.
Yeah.
They miss home, of course. They
yeah.
miss my aunts, uncles, but they see how it is democracy here. How can you live here with the freedom of working and get your fair wages?
Are your parents now, are they citizens?
They are not. They're permanent resident. I was working with mom to get a U.S. citizen. She got scheduled for a test because all the staff with immigration, they have a post yet.
Okay.
We're just waiting.
Yeah. What was the health care like over in Venezuela? Did they have any?
It is terrible.
It is?
Someone that gets sick, it's almost a death sentence, depending on what it is. Yes. You go there and you have to get everything from the syringes to gloves for the doctor. It is.
You have to buy them.
You have to buy and bring them with you.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is terrible. And it wasn't that bad when I was there. But it was getting to that point.
Mm-hmm. Are you still able to stay in contact with your family, friends and family back there?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, thankfully, yes, we can talk to them. And they're doing well right now, despite what is going on right now, you know, there. So,
what are Miguel and Ronnie doing now? What's their life like?
So, they... Probably it's been there for about 3 months.
Uh-huh.
They are trying to make a living.
Yeah.
Selling stuff. My brother Miguel is kind of selling clothes and stuff like that. He buy and resells them to, you know, make some money. Ronnie is working a little bit of a grocery store at his house.
At his house?
Yeah, to be able to sell, you know, to the community and help out, but help himself, you know, trying to, you know, make a living that way. So,
all right.
Yeah, but they're doing well so far.
I know they told me once, and we were able to communicate through that app, that language app, you know, and that's how we communicated. But as time went on, you know, they were picking up more and more English all the time. But there was two words that I learned, because I realized I wasn't going to learn Spanish. I mean, I was like too old to learn Spanish, but there was just two words that I use quite a bit, and that was bueno and no bueno.
There you go. That says it all, yeah.
Yeah. That's a great, that's bueno, no bueno. So that worked out good for us. But what they told me, and maybe you could elaborate on this a little bit, that they had to be concerned because sometimes the police would just come in and take whatever they wanted, you know, and there wasn't a thing they could do about it.
Yeah.
You know, the corruption was so bad.
Oh, yeah. Like, they have motorcycles. It's the way to move there faster.
The police or everybody?
Everybody.
Okay.
Everybody pretty much have a motorcycle. And but they're the checkpoints, you know, the police sometimes stop people, ask for paperwork, even if you have the right paperwork, they still ask you for money to let you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
If you don't have any, sometimes they just take the motorcycle.
Really?
And confiscate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It had happened to Ronnie and Miguel that they had to find some money to be able to get the motorcycle back.
Oh,
back.
Darn.
So, yeah.
Now, do they have a shot at it coming back over to U.S.?
I'm not sure. I'm praying that maybe when Venezuela gets better, the relationship between the countries get better, and we have an embassy there, and they'll be able to request a visa. So that's our hope.
You know, the one thing about Venezuela is, which, you know, they have the largest oil fields in the world.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But they, from what I understand, they've just kind of let them go to the wayside. They haven't kept up with them. No,
everything got neglected since the United States and all the private companies that were there, they had to leave because Chavez pretty much kicked them out, Maduro. So everything didn't get the proper maintenance,
mm-hmm.
and everything got, declined
mm-hmm.
Tremendously, that people couldn't keep up, or people didn't have the knowledge how to keep them maintenance. And that happened with the electric company sometimes. That's why sometimes people lose power for half of the day because they have to ration the power. Well, that's what they told me.
Yeah.
So
were the, I know there's been a lot of gangs, people from gangs brought here or came here during the last 4 years. Was that an issue? Did you realize that, or did your brothers and mom and dad realize any gang trouble when you where you lived?
Yeah, we really didn't realize that that was going to happen. But, you know, the regimes to stay in power, they're trying to move, you know, their pieces to be able to stay in power. And that's one of the strategies, I believe, that they use. Like, let's just use gangs members, let's just create this group of people and let's just send them. And then we had a problem here in the United States where some people came and did crime. And sometimes they weren't even Venezuelans. Sometimes they were even Cubans, because a lot of Cubans were there in Venezuela. And they were just start gang members and start, you know, doing not just the United States, to different part of the world. Mm-hmm. And just to make the name, basically the name of Venezuela bad.
I understand a lot of Russians and the Chinese have moved in to Venezuela as well?
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. A lot of those socialist countries has the hands of Venezuela. They pretty much invaded Venezuela.
Invaded it?
Yeah, with, of course, the permission of the dictator, Nicolas Maduro. And the last few years has been, I know that they have been heavily involved because the economy had declined even worse.
What do you think? Do you think that the vice president, you think the people can operate there? You think you have a free election now and get things back on track?
So the extraction of Nicolas Maduro, I think, is a small portion of what needs to happen for Venezuela to be free.
Okay.
There is still Delcy Rodriguez, was the vice president appointed by Nicolas Maduro, her brother, that is the minister of the National Assembly. Diosdado Cabello is one of the key guys there, that you can tell that he is a narco guy as well. So a lot of people need to be taken out of there.
Okay.
So they have to be a completely wipe out of power. And I know that president most likely is in his plans to do that, because he wouldn't just extract one person to keep someone else to replace him to do the same thing.
So as a Venezuelan, you're pretty happy about it.
Absolutely, sir. I am very excited for what is to come. I see a lot of my people very excited, because I know a lot of people are in different countries, not because they wanted to leave, just because they were forced to leave. They were just fleeing for their lives. They were fleeing for the protection of their own kids, because they wanted them to be okay.
Yeah. So. Well, Rodrigo, thanks so much for coming in today. It's been very educational. Appreciate you. And best of luck to you and your family.
Thank you so much, sir, for inviting me.